ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
इंद्रियाणि मनोपतिरस्याधिष्ठानमुच्यते चेतर्विमोह। टू श्लोकास इन दिस क्लासिक, टेक्स्ट नंबर 40 एंड टेक्स्ट नंबर 41। सो जैसा कि भगवद्गीता किंचित भगवद्गीता, सो व्हाट डिड यू डिस्कस लास्ट वीक, टेक्स्ट नंबर 40 एंड 41। इंद्रियाणि मनोपतिरस्याधिष्ठानमुच्यते। So you all can come to the center, so that is new, you have to come again. You can come here. Come on. Who can begin? Who will make the opening of revision? So every week, you know what is our practice? Some of you have come newly today. We begin with kirtans, then we recite the prayers. And after that we recite the shlokas from the third chapter, and then we begin the class. While opening the class, we begin with the revision of the previous class, whatever we discussed in the previous class, and then we have a discussion. At the end, again we have kirtan, and we finish the book, and then prasadam. So, because we are revising, I request all of you to make a little hint every time we come, or at least register it to me and remember it so that we can recollect next time. What did we discuss last week? Currently we are discussing on the topic of lust, and to be very precise, lust means there is a difference between love and lust. Atmendriya priti vicha darat krishnendriya priti vancha atmendriya priti vancha taratallikam krishnendriya priti vicha darat premana. It is said when one wants to satisfy Krishna, that is called as love. When one wants to satisfy one's own senses, that is called as lust. Very simple definition. Lust is called as sense gratification. We call it gratifying one's own senses. So here we are, the topic is going on about lust. And as Jaya Prabhu made an opening now, we were discussing last week, after talking about lust, then Krishna is giving a clue to where is the sitting place of this enemy, lust. Because Krishna said in the earlier sloka, Avritam jnanametena jnanino nirvritta vairinah. It is the eternal enemy of the transcendentalist, Krishna says. For the transcendentalist, this lust is the eternal enemy to conquer. Avritam jnanametena jnanino nirvritta vairinah. Kama rupena kaunteya dishpurena analanacha. This is what we discussed, I think, later. Dishpurena analanacha means it is insatiable. By any amount of Balabhadra Devotion says very beautifully, he says, when you understand that someone is your enemy, then you can pacify him in so many ways. You know how? How can you pacify your enemy? I don't know the Sanskrit words. The last one is danda, you know, sama beda, what is it? Sama dama? Dana, second is dana, yeah. Sama dana, beda danda? Yeah. Sama dama? Yeah, what is the first one, sama? No, last one is danda. Last one is danda. Actually, in this, so what Balabhadra Devotion says, it is a little different. He says, if you understand that somebody is your enemy, first you try to pacify him by your words. Tell him, try to understand, make him understand the position. But if he is not understanding with the words, then you pacify him by telling him, okay, it is my fault, only please accept a small gift. So can satisfy a person. Take this gift and be quiet. And if he's still not satisfied, then give him some position. Then he may become little pacified. But still if he's not pacified, then the only way to That's where he makes the analysis. So, when he talks about lust, he says, lust is not satisfied by any of this. Danda is only means, he says, and it's a punishment senses. These other things the lust never hears. Lust is such a bad master. As one of the like poet sings, or Mashna poet sings, Kamadinam Katana Kapita Bhumisha Pali Kamadinam Katana Kapita Pali Palisha Bhumisha says, Esham Trayi Na Karuna No Pashanti, he says. He says, this senses have been demanding for so many lifetimes, and every time they demanded, I was trying to satisfy them. The more I try to satisfy them, the more they are demanding. Palita means actually to, you know, nicely take care of them. Whatever they need, to give them, like taking care of a dog, you know, whenever he is hungry, he gives them. The same way I was satisfying my senses for so many lifetimes. But he says, na karuna na upashanti. But after doing all these things, it is not allowing me to remain peaceful. And the lust is such a bad master. So he says, now that I understood that lust is a bad master, I'm not going to hear any more words of my senses. Rather, I would like to bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and become his devotee, he says. So this arises from Vairagya. So, in the same way, we were seeing how Vishpurena Anilanacha, Anil means like fire. This insatiable fire of lust can never be satisfied unless one doubtless all one's mind and senses towards Krishna. So one wants to know, okay, lust is such an enemy. Let me know where it is located. Then accordingly I can attack my enemy and I can escape from him. So Krishna says in the next loka, where is lust located? Where does he say? Is the lust located? Indriyani manaha buddhir atyadishthana muchyate. Three places he says. Indriyani, manaha and buddhir. So he says it is there in the senses, in every one of the senses, he says, lust is present. And you can see the presence of lust can be experienced by the passion with which one wants to enjoy the senses. Like with the tongue, we want to eat unlimitedly, isn't it? Like for example, if a delicious preparation is kept in front of us, sometimes you want to eat a lot, because stomach wants a lot to eat, keep on eating. Sometimes stomach cries, oh, it is enough, I am full, don't give me any more. But the tongue says, no, 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 it is so sweet, so good, let me have a little more. You still have expectations you cannot control. This is actually passion, exhibited by the tongue. Similarly, the eyes, the nose, the tongue, the ears, all these indriyas, they all are in full form to enjoy. So he says, in the senses the lust is there, in the mind the lust is there, in intelligence the lust is located. Then what else is there? He says, in all the states of the lust is sitting. Indriyani mano buddhira chadishthanam chate yete vimohayatyesha jnanam avritya dehinam. And through them lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. So Prabhupada writes about this. Esatma buddhi kunapeti datuke. This Prabhupada says, when one identifies himself with the body, he has the atma buddhi. If one thinks his body is made up of three dhatu and I am this body, then this lust is very prominent in such a person. That means to the degree you become conscious of yourself, self is the soul, atma, that degree one can gradually become free. But Krishna explains in the next verse, tasmatam indriyanyado niyamya bharatarshada tapmanam padiheshyanam jnana vijnana nashanam, he says. Therefore, my dear Arjun, what you should do? Tasmatam indriyanyado. Indriyani ado means beginning from indriya, the man and the buddhi, all of them, what should you do? You should control them. Tasmatam indriyanyado niyamya bharatarshada, regulate them. See, when Krishna says regulate them, that means the senses should be engaged properly. They shouldn't be allowed to wander here and there according to their own desire. They should be regulated according to the scriptural injunctions. That's what Krishna says. How should the senses be used? How should the mind be used? How should the intelligence be used? Was the most elaborate subject matter last week, is it not? I think we began from the senses, I think, when we told about the mind. Who can say? Little, anybody can say? Huh? Yes, we talked about the story of Karanjan and we explained. Somebody can tell only the allegory in that? beginning from who is Paranjan first? Who can say? Somebody else can say? Paranjan is the soul. Why is called Paranjan? Who can say? Puram means everybody remembers? King. King who is ruling over a particular state or something, who has a kajana. Anybody remembers the example? Yes. If the king takes all the taxes and enjoys himself, you know, without using it for the benefit of the people, in the same way the soul has acquired everything from God, so he has to use it for God's service. But rather, if the soul uses all the senses and mind and intelligence for his own satisfaction, then he is called as Paranjan. So, then we were talking how this Paranjan was very dissatisfied. He was wandering in so many places and then he saw a beautiful woman. That woman is compared to intelligence. And the woman is protected by whom? Who can say? Different people should answer. Somebody can raise hands and I will ask questions. Otherwise, the answer comes from only one person. Five good snake. Yeah. Who is that five good snake? Pancha Pranas. Five life as Prana Panadhyana Vyansama. And then she was also protected by? How many? So somebody else should say, who are the 11 bodyguards? Yes, Karmendriyas, Jnanendriyas and the mind. So material intelligence and material senses with which the soul wants to enjoy. So in the same way he wanted to enjoy her. So he asked her a question. Who can tell me that question? What question did Paranjan ask her? Who can say? What is your origin? Yeah. What is your origin? And what is the origin of all these people who are with you? So what did she say? I don't know what is my origin and I don't know the origin of all these people. She said. But she said, I know one thing, yes? Yes. Wherever I go, they come along with me, she said. And then? So you all are understanding the other part of the meaning? Is it easy to understand? That means the intelligence is saying that all these five senses, ten senses and one mind, they are always accompanying me wherever I go. But what did she say? One thing she said, I know. Yes. She said, this Puram is a nice place to enjoy. This place where we are available now. I can give you suggestions how we can enjoy. The same way the lusty intelligence suggests the living entity how we can enjoy in this material world. So you all have understood the example very nicely. So we were talking about mind, intelligence and even all this. So after that, what did we see? After that? Yes? Anything else, Isa? Ramakshantra? About time. That was a day end, I think, isn't it? So now we talked about the mind, intelligence. Were we talking about the senses and mind and intelligence separately? No. Was he telling you that you should engage the senses first? No?
Yes?
Out of the three, which is easy to control? Senses. So Krishna says, Tasmatvam Indriyanyadav, he says. So first one should try to control the senses. But how can you control the senses? Anybody remember? What did he say? Yes. How? By? Like? Yes. You all are able to hear? So he is saying that we should first engage our senses. How? By engaging the ears and hearing Krishna Katha, by using the eyes for looking at Krishna, by using the body for falling down before Krishna, like that. So in so many ways we can use. Yeah, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, all these things we can do. Yeah, Ambarish marriage. That's how Mana Krishna Padaram, you are telling us. And then, what about the mind? What did you say about the mind? You want to say, Ramana? He says, ನಾಮ ರೂಪ ಚರಿತ ಆದಿ ಸುಕೀರ್ತನಾನು ಮೋಚ್ ದ ಎಂಗೇಜ್ ಇನ್ ಡೂಯಿಂಗ್ ದ ಕೀರ್ತನ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ನೇಮ್ ಫಾರ್ಮ್ ಪಾಸ್ಟ್ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಕ್ವಾಲಿಟೀಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಸುಪ್ರೀಮ್ ಲಾರ್ಡ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಸ್ಮೃತ್ಯ ಕ್ರಮೇಣ ರಚನಾ ಮನಸ್ಸಿ ನಿಯೋಜ್ಯ ದ ಟೈಮ್ಸ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಎಂಗೇಜ್ ಇನ್ ಮೀಟಿಂಗ್ ದ ಪ್ರಸಾದಂ ನಾಟ್ ಎನಿಥಿಂಗ್ ಎಲ್ಸ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಸ್ಪೀಚ್ ರಿಮೆಂಬರ್ ವಿತ್ ದ ಮೈಂಡ್ ಆಲ್ ದೀಸ್ ಥಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ನಾಮ ರೂಪ ಚರಿತ ಆದಿ ಆಲ್ ದೀಸ್ ಥಿಂಗ್ಸ್ ಆಲ್ವೇಸ್ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಕಾನ್ಶಿಯಸ್ನೆಸ್ ಸೊ ವಿ ವಿಲ್ ಗೋ ಅಹೆಡ್ ಟುಡೇ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಆಲ್ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಟುವರ್ಡ್ಸ್ ದ ಎಂಡ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ನೆಕ್ಸ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ ದ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಟೆಲ್ಸ್ ಅಸ್ ಇಂದ್ರಿಯಾಣಿ ಪರಾಣ್ಯಾಗುರು ಇಂದ್ರಿಯ ಪರಂಪರ ಮನಸ್ಸು ಪರಾಬುದ್ಧಿ ಯೋಗಬುದ್ಧಿ ಪರತಸ್ತು ಸರ್ ಇಸ್ ಇಸ್ ದ ಇಂದ್ರಿಯಸ್ ಆರ್ ದ ಸೆನ್ಸಸ್ ಆರ್ ಸುಪೀರಿಯರ್ ಟು ದಲ್ ಮ್ಯಾಟರ್ Why he says so? He is telling the superiority of one over another. He is telling the indriyas are superior to dull matter, and the man is superior to indriya, and the buddhi is superior to man, and the atma is above all, he is saying. So what can we understand from this? The indriya, why is it called the superior, do you know? Because when you talk of lust, the lust is contained all over the body. But the lust gets vent through the senses. So the senses are considered superior, like Prabhupada says, the lust is reserved within the body, all over the body, but it is manifested only through the senses. So the senses are considered superior. And the mind is considered still superior. Why? Because even when you are sleeping, the mind is active. When you are lying down, in the night when you are sleeping, still the mind is wandering in so many places. Mind is very active. So mind is considered superior. And buddhi is still considered superior because the mind, for example, you should eat gulab jamun. It's very tasty. Mind easily accepts gulab jamun. And when you take 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, even 20, mind says you should keep on taking, it's very tasty. It doesn't have any discrimination. But intelligence says, you should take more than 5 or 6, then you may have to go to a doctor. You'll get stomachache. So intelligence says, like for example, if a doctor comes to give you injection, the mind says, oh, it will be very painful. No, I don't want an injection. But intelligence says, no. If you don't take injection, you may probably die. Or you may have to become further sick. So intelligence says, no, you should take injection. So that means intelligence is a decision maker. And the mind simply is accepting and rejecting, whimsically, simply by concocting. So which is superior? Intelligence is superior. Because intelligence has the ability to discriminate what to do and what not to do. But mind is simply the storehouse of thoughts and previous actions and desires. That means desires, when I say, I mean both. That means aversions and attachments. Both are there in the mind. So to some things we are attached, to some things we are averse. We don't like some things. That means accepting and rejecting. That's the nature of the mind. But intelligence can direct the mind, which is good and which is not good. Even if something is very attractive, still you should not become attached. You should be careful. So that kind of direction can be given by the intelligence. So intelligence is further superior. And the soul is superior to all, he says. It's even superior to intelligence. And that is our true existence. When you talk of soul, we are the soul actually. But although we are the soul, still we are unable to completely control the mind or the intelligence or the senses. What is the reason? Prabhupada explains in the purport here that the soul should be engaged with the Supreme, and then naturally all intelligence, mind, body, everything will be controlled. Prabhupada says here, it is, therefore the soul is directly engaged with the Supreme. Naturally all other subordinates, namely the intelligence, mind and senses, will be automatically engaged. So how can the soul be engaged in Krishna service? How can the soul be engaged in God's service so that all these things will not be disturbed? That can be achieved by beginning with sadhana bhakti. What is sadhana bhakti? Sadhana bhakti, you all are sadhakas. Sadhaka, you know the meaning of sadhak? Sadhak means a sincere seeker of truth who wants to truly achieve happiness in his life. There are so many different forms of happiness in this world. And everyone is running here and there in want of happiness. Why should we also not run here and there? Why are we trying to go for some other happiness? Anybody can say. See, the whole world is after happiness. There is no question about it. Everyone knows about it. Like if somebody wants money, he goes abroad. He wants to earn money. Or he wants to earn name and fame. Anything you want in life, if you carefully observe, you know, the ultimate end result is happiness. Is it not? Everyone is seeking happiness. So everyone is running here and there, whether we are sitting here and discussing. Why can't we also run like that? Yes. Yes, they are after temporary happiness, which is called as Asat Prashna, which is like mirage in the desert. So in this world, there is apparently some happiness which is promised to us, but when one tries to enjoy that happiness, the senses are never satisfied. One runs out of that happiness here and there, still they are not satisfied. We have given so many examples in the previous classes. So we want to achieve permanent happiness, which can never be taken away from us, which will always be with us. So in order to achieve that, we have become sadhakas in spiritual life. The sadhak is one who is a sincere candidate in spiritual life, who follows all the rules and regulations enunciated in the scriptures, and by following this path very carefully, then when he advances in his stages of sadhana, he can gradually perceive the real happiness. Prabhupada says, how is it like? You know, how do you experience it? It is something like a diseased man coming out of his disease. When you have jaundice, and you are very, very feverish. When you have jaundice, everything looks yellow, you have seen? Anybody had a jaundice? Isn't it? Yeah, everything looks yellowish, isn't it? Especially when you are in severe stages, some people suffer for 3-4 months, and everything looks yellowish. But when you come gradually out of the jaundice, when you come out of the fever, like during jaundice, the sugar cane is not at all tasty. In the same way, when we are spiritually sick, that means we are filled with lust, then the Krishna Katha is not at all tasty for us. Because I shall tell this beautiful example. How the jaundiced person cannot appreciate sugar candy, although it is naturally very sweet. But the doctor, what does he tell him? Whether you like or not, you have to drink sugar cane juice. That is the right medicine. The jaundice. Then he keeps on drinking every day, but he drinks it as a medicine. He doesn't take it as, but when we take sugarcane, how we take it? It's something very enjoyable to us. But when a jaundiced man takes sugarcane juice, it's so bitter. Any of you experience jaundice? You must. Huh? So you taste the sugarcane juice? Very bitter, isn't it? Very bitter. Very bitter. When I was a student in IIT, I had 3 months jaundice. It was so bitter, unbelievably bitter. But the same jaundice, how when it goes gradually, the sweetness gradually comes in the tongue. So he says, Sat Krishna Nama Charitadi Sitatta Vidya Pitto Padatta Rasanasana Rochitanu Kintwadaratana Dinankala Seva Dishta Sadhi Krama Bhavati Tadgata Mola Hanti. He says, even if it is very bitter, hearing Krishna Katha, or doing kirtans, or attending classes, or doing the chanting at the holy name, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Even if it is not very tasty, he says, if a person is sincere, Kintu Adarat Anudinam. Anudinam, what is so important? What is Anudinam? Every day. Some people, they do chanting for 1 or 2 days. And on the 3rd day, they don't go to temple, they have no devotees around. Then they think, oh, it is boring, so difficult. Or they justify, saying that I am too busy now, too busy to chant. Although they are very busy, they don't forget to go to the lavatory, to take bath, to take food, to read newspaper, to see television. They have time for all of that except chanting. But here the person says, Kintu Adarat Anudinam Kalasavadishta. Every day you should chant, even if you don't like it. And every day we should hear Bhagavatam, or every week we should attend the program. Then he says, what will happen? Kintu Adarat Anudinam Kalasavadishta. Sadhvi Kramat, he says, little by little, gradually, Tadgata Mula Hantri, the disease will be uprooted completely. Then one can get the taste for Holy Name and Krishna Katha. So, that is why you have the Sadhana Bhakti. And Sadhana Bhakti has 2 divisions. One is called as Vaidhi Bhakti and Radhanuga Bhakti. Vaidhi, the word itself suggests that there are some vidhis. Vaidhi Bhakti means you have to follow certain vidhis. What are the vidhis that we follow? That you have to associate ABCD. That associate A for association, B for books, C for chanting. That what then? Krishna Prasad. Not described with the doctor. If it is a spiritual letter, it is described with Krishna Prasad. So, A for association, you have to associate with devotees. And you should read books. What books you should read? Spiritual books. And you should chant every day. And you should have diet, which is Krishna Prasad. And when you do all these things, and you have to wake up for mangalarti, you should take bath, and they should come in front of the deities and look, behold the beauty of the deities, and we should do all of that. This is called sadhana bhakti, following the principles enunciated by the acharyas. And when you follow sadhana bhakti, it may not be very sweet, as you were telling just now. It may be difficult to follow, because we don't have a natural interest for spiritual life. Everyone comes to spiritual life sometimes for various reasons, as I was telling earlier. So you may not find it very tasty in the beginning. Like for example, mind always wants to wander, do this and that. But when you want to chant Hare Krishna, you have to sit and you have to chant the same mantra for like, say, half an hour. And mind is restless. He immediately wants to stand, he wants to go there, or do this job, or do that job, you know. Mind always wants to wander. But one has to train the mind. No, now you should meditate. It's time for meditation. I will just sit, and for the coming half an hour, I'm going to simply hear the holy name and no other business. Whatever else I have, I will do it later. Now I'm not going to tell anything else. So this is the meaning of Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi means rule. You have to make it a rule. Like every day you know you have to chant. Sometimes in the morning before going to office you know you have to chant, but you don't feel like chanting. You don't feel like chanting. Then you think maybe I'll chant in the evening. In the evening you come back. Mind tells you maybe you can chant tomorrow morning. Isn't it? Like it happens with people. Like when, every week when I go for the programs I ask the students, do you chant regularly? Everyone we used to ask one by one. Here we are not able to ask everyone because so many devotees here. So in the few we asked them, do you chant? So one boy said, not regularly, he said. Not regularly, then how often you chant? He said, only once a week, he said. Only once a week? When do you chant? Today you chant, only in the class, he said. Only when I come here, I chant. So people are very, very reluctant to chant. Very reluctant to chant every day in their home. In the class also they chant because we are told to chant. So this habit of chanting every day is not very easy unless one understands that I am doing Vaidhi Bhakti. Vaidhi Bhakti means this is actually Vidhi, rule. Like you brush your teeth every day, you take your bath every day, after bath you eat your food, don't you? In the same way, this should become one of your habits. You should know that this is my habit, I can't leave it. Every day after bath when I come, I will sit and chant one round. You should do that. That is Vaidhi Bhakti. Whether we like or not, we should do. And if you make it a regulation, then you will see that it produces results. So the tablet, you know, when doctor gives you a very, very, especially if any of you are taking some homeopath, you know, medicines, sometimes they give you some churnams, you know, powders to, and you have to put it in the mouth and you have to drink water. It is so bitter or so astringent, horrible in taste. But ultimately it is to remove the horrible things in your stomach, isn't it? I have a practical experience myself because I'm taking them now. So when you eat those powders, they are so bitter in the tongue that inside they go and do a very good job, isn't it? And they remove all the nasty things in the stomach. Similarly, chanting the whole name is very bitter. You know, your mind tells you, you have to do this, you have to do that, what is this? I don't have time, you know. So you have to chant. That's why it is very strongly to chant. But when it goes inside, Pincheto Darpanamajanam Bhavamaha Dava Nirvapanam, it cleans the heart inside and it delivers us from this dangerous material existence. So understanding that the result produced by the chanting is so great, keeping that in mind, we should sincerely chant. That is Vaidhi Bhakti. So initially it is Vaidhi Bhakti. Later on what happens? The same bhakti when you continue to do, day after day, month after month, year after year, when your heart gets cleansed, then it becomes Raganuga Bhakti. Raganuga means spontaneous love. Like if you attend Mangalarti every day, and you chant every day, and you do some service every day, after some years you will see that in the morning when you wake up, you will jump from your bed, and you will go to the bathroom and you will take a cold water bath happily, and you will go to the temple, you will be rushing to the temple to take the darshan of the deities of the Lord. So beautiful in the morning. And you will be jubilantly dancing without even a slight trace of slackness, slight trace of laziness. You'll be so happy to do that. It'll become so spontaneous for you. That is called as Raganuga Bhakti. Raganuga means very spontaneous. Chanting is spontaneous, kidding is spontaneous, meeting devotees is spontaneous, loving devotees is spontaneous, everything becomes spontaneous. They are not forced on you. You understand the point? Prabhupada says Vaidhi Bhakti is something like a military discipline. Prabhupada says military discipline means military, you have seen, they have to wake up in the morning, they have to left, right, left, all those things. and they have to wear particular uniform. And if somebody doesn't do that, they are punished, isn't it? The same way in the beginning, our Bhaktimag may be apparently like a little punishment. Some people may feel, isn't it? What is this? It's too much. Somebody may say it's fanaticism. Why your mind tells you it's fanaticism? Because mind doesn't want to do it. That's all. Mind wants in justification. So in Vaidhi Bhakti, it may be a little bitter. But when you do it, and when you advance, that means the more you advance, you are becoming free from the disease of materialism. Prabhupada says it is like the reduction of the fever. When somebody has fever, 101, 102, mouth becomes bitter, isn't it? Food is not at all tasty. But when the fever subsides, when it comes to normal temperature, then the food becomes very tasty. In the same way, when we come to pure natural consciousness, at that time we can experience taste in chanting and taste in everything. That is Raghanuga Bhakti. So in Vaidhi Bhakti we are like a child who is newly admitted in the school. If a child is taught, you know, 1, 2, 3. If a child is taught addition, child will count like this, 1. He has 1 plus 2, 1, and then 2 totally is 3, he will say. But if I ask you, he can so easily say, 1 plus 2 is 3. Raghanuga Bhakti is like that. It is spontaneous. One has a natural love for Krishna and that. And then above Raghanuga Bhakti comes Bhava Bhakti. And then it is Prema Bhakti. Bhava Bhakti is like an ocean of love for Krishna. Bhava is actually like waves in the ocean of Prema Bhakti. Prema Bhakti is actually the ocean. And Bhava is the waves. Bhava is like the different waves of the ocean. So, Prabhupada writes here that the soul should be engaged with the Supreme. Then naturally, all the intelligence, mind, everything is controlled. What we are talking here, we see practical examples for this. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had such a spontaneous love. That's actually the prema, highest stage. And Chaitanya, at every moment in his life, he could remember Krishna. 24 hours. Actually, the soul is engaged with Krishna and the soul cannot think of anything else. There is a constant remembrance. That is the stage of Uttama Adhikari Bhakta. Uttama Adhikari is one who sees Krishna everywhere, wherever he turns around. He sees Krishna. The Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would see a sand dune and he would think it is Govardhan. So he would run out of the sand dune. Govardhan, Govardhan, he was shouting and running after that. And all the devotees caught hold of him. One time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Yamuna and the blackish waters, he saw the tremendous name of Krishna jumping into the waters. He has so much love for Krishna. He would be constantly talking about Krishna, whomever comes to him. That was his qualification. That is the qualification of Uttama Adhikari, who is constantly emanating Krishna Shakti from his body, from his senses and from his mouth. Simply by, that's why when the people of Kuliya Gram, when they went to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the leader of the people of Kuliya, you know, they asked a question, who is the topmost devotee? He gave 3 definitions, but the topmost definition he gave, you know what is it? Anybody knows? Yes, this is the topmost definition. First he said, one who anybody who chants Krishna's name is a Vaishnava, he said. And the next year they asked the same question. And Mahaprabhu this time understood that these people are a little more mature now. Now they can understand a little higher knowledge. Then he told them, that is the Sanatana Goswami. So to them he told them, anybody who is constantly chanting Krishna's name, he is only a Vaishnava, he said. First, what did he say? Anybody who says Krishna even once, is a Vaishnava, he said, in the first year. When they went later to Mahaprabhu and asked him again, second time, what did he say? One who is constantly chanting Krishna's name, he is a Vaishnava, he said. And when they went at later time, the Mahaprabhu understood that they have been practicing Krishna consciousness, now they are more advanced, and he gave them a more advanced answer. No, he said, that person is a Vaishnava by simply seeing whom everyone begins to chant Krishna's names. Such a person is a Vaishnava, I said. Person is a Vaishnava. So, this is a Uttama Adhikari. Simply to see that person, you want to chant Krishna's names. Such a person is a Uttama Adhikari. So, there are many, many examples in the Shastras. Morning we were discussing about Bhagavatam, how when Vidura himself is a very great devotee. And when Vidura met Uddhava, you all know about Uddhava? Uddhava, he is the disciple of Brihaspati, very scholarly. But he looks like very much like Krishna. So Uddhava is almost at the same age as Krishna. He was a very great devotee of Krishna. And once Uddhava was told by Krishna to visit Vrindavan. So this Uddhava was so fortunate to be with Krishna just before Krishna left the world for his own abode. So Vidura, when he left the association of Kauravas, and he didn't want to take part in the Kurukshetra battlefield, so he went to some holy places. So while wandering the holy places in the tat of Yamuna, in the banks of Yamuna, he met Uddhava. When he rushed to Uddhava, he became so happy that I could meet you here by the will of the Supreme Lord. So he wanted to ask him some questions. So he asked him about how is Krishna and how is Yudhishthira ruling the kingdom so righteously, and how is Akrura, the uncle of Krishna, who cannot serve Krishna for even for a moment. So he asked all these questions, because all these questions are so much connected to Krishna. After hearing all this, Uddhava, he became so stunned, he fainted in ecstasy. He became unconscious. He could not speak, and Uddhava was asking, Uddhava was waiting for his answers. Then Uddhava gradually came back to their normal consciousness, and then he replied. So we see there are great devotees of Krishna like this who are absorbed in Krishna consciousness so much. That means the soul is constantly engaged in Krishna service. Of course, if you, most of you must have read about Akrura's visit to Vrindavan, how Akrura, when he was sent by Kamsa as a messenger to call Krishna to Mathura to come for a wrestling match, Akrura was going. Actually, Akrura, although he was living on the side of Kamsa, he always was a very great devotee of Krishna. So he was thinking, what will Krishna feel if I go and call him for the wrestling match? Then he said to himself, he was going in the chariot, he brought the chariot, and from Mathura to Vrindavan he was going. He was thinking, no, Krishna is the Supreme Lord, he is hidden in everyone's heart as a super soul. So he will understand my mind. He knows I am his devotee, I am his unconditional devotee. So he will not think I am an enemy's messenger. Then he was thinking, as soon as he goes to Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram, they must be milking the cows. And as soon as they see me, Krishna and Balaram will call me, Uncle, they will call me. So he was saying to himself, and I will feel so jubilant, and I will completely become stunned. And they will take me inside the house, they will make me sit, and they will very lovingly talk with me, they will inquire about, like that he was thinking. So he was constantly absorbed, thinking in his mind this and that. And by the time he finished thinking of all this, the Vrindavan came. And as soon as he understood, I am entering Vrindavan, he stopped the chariot and he fell on the ground of Vrindavan with his face touching the sand of Vrindavan, and he rolled on the ground of Vrindavan. And Prabhupada says, this is the consciousness in which one should enter Vrindavan. You cannot go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket, Prabhupada says. Of course, we all do that, isn't it? Don't you purchase a ticket while you go to Vrindavan? We do purchase a ticket. But why Prabhupada says you can't go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket? Because we can go to Vrindavan, but we cannot go to Vrindavan. We are physically present in Vrindavan, but we are not in the bhava of Akrura. So, real meaning of entering Vrindavan is to enter Vrindavan with this bhavana. Akrura had that bhavana. He had that great life of Krishna. So, this is the meaning of absorbing oneself and understanding one's constitution, position, and relation with Krishna. Then such a person, he will never be disturbed in his mind or intelligence or senses, because he has no other business in this world. The soul is already connected to Krishna. It has become so absorbed in Krishna that the mind and intelligence senses, they all are cooperating with his desire. Everything is going. That's why Yamunacharya sings, Yata Vati Mama Cheta Krishna Tadara Vinde Navana Varasa Dama Nudda Tarantumasi Tata Vati Bata Nari Sangame Smaryamani Bhavati Mukadivikara Sushti Nishtri Ranancha. He says, Yata Vati Mama Cheta Krishna Tadara Vinde, my cheta, when my heart is filled with Krishna consciousness, whenever I think of Krishna like that, what happens to me? Navanava Rasadama Ruddha Tarantumasa. Newer and newer and newer transcendental bellows are arising in my heart. See, Krishna is always engaged in loving pastimes with the devotees. And the mellow that is derived between Krishna and the devotees is called as transcendental humor. It is not ordinary humor of this world that is done by Charlie Chaplin. It is transcendental humor. What is the meaning of transcendental humor? Transcendental humor means Krishna performs pastimes which puts his devotees into great laughter. Like when you see Krishna's pastime, or Krishna is telling the, like when Krishna enters the house in the absence of the gopis, and he tries to jump and get the, what you call the butter pot. He's not able to get it. When he calls all his friends, come, then we will all make a pyramid. Then he climbs somewhere. When they all make a pyramid, and then Krishna breaks the pot into, takes out the makkan and distributes it to the monkeys and their friends, and he also eats. And then when he hears some noise or somebody coming inside, then all of them ran away, leaving Madhumangala child, who has a lame legs who cannot walk fastly. So when we hear of these pastimes, it produces a great joy in the delight in the heart of devotees. This is transcendental humor. So this is actually in the mood of Vatsalaras of how child Krishna is behaving like this. So Krishna with his Sakha, with his mother, with his father, with the gopis, his lovers, he extended so many pastimes, that unlimited pastimes described in the scriptures. By hearing all this, the soul will greatly rejoice to the degree to which he is purified. When you hear these pastimes, if you are not sufficiently purified, you may become envious. But if you are purified, to the extent you are purified, it completely puts the soul, it submerges the soul in the ocean of ecstasy. That is transcendental humor. So he says, Nava Nava, Udyataram, he says, Yadavati Namacheta Krishna Padaravanti, Nava Nava, Udyataram, Rasna Vantumachit, he says. It produces so much transcendental ecstasy in my heart. And when it is happening, what else is happening, he says? And he says, Tadavati Patanari Sangame Smaryamane. And when I think of the thought of associating with a woman, Nari Sangame, Smaryamane, when the thought comes to my mind, Bhavati Mukha Vikara Sushtu Nishtrivanam Chai, he says, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the very thought of it. He says, when I think of the association of a woman, my lips curl in distaste and I spit at the thought of it. Who can so confidently say that? Only pure devotee of Krishna can say that. Because he is tasting a higher rasa, for in the bodily lust, he is simply like a sukha roti. There is nothing. For him, it is simply like a dry roti which has no taste. On the other hand, he is having a full plate of Mahaprasad. It is like the transcendental members of Krishna's transcendental humor. So he is tasting that moment after moment, 24 hours a day. Then what is the value of the worldly habit? So here, that's where the spiritual consciousness and in touch with Krishna. When one becomes completely absorbed like that, then the mind, intelligence and sensitivity will all are bodily conscious. In Baba Vidya, skin disease means bodily consciousness. We have so much skin disease, Baba Vidya. That means so much bodily consciousness. So to the degree to we are constantly lamenting. So one who constantly laments is called as a Shudra. Shudra means he laments for everything. Anything you say, he laments. He's a Shudra. So that consciousness should be given up. And we should, although at the present moment we are not exalted pure devotees, still we should always try to remember that we are not the body. We are the soul. And our business is different. Our business is Krishna's service. Directly, Prabhupada says here, with intelligence one has to seek out the constitutional position of the soul and then engage the mind always in Krishna consciousness. That solves the whole problem, he says. That solves the whole problem. That means you should understand what is your constitutional position. That one should understand, he says. When the great learned scholar, Sanatana Goswami, the great learned scholar and the devotee of the Lord, he approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and he asked him, Kiyami, Kenyama, Kitapachai, Vihanahi Gani Shudra Chananai. He said, my dear Lord Chaitanya Prabhu, first of all, he was such a great scholar and he was a minister of Bengal. He was a Nawab Hussain Shah and Rupa Hussain Sanatana Goswami, they were actually working under him as ministers. And because Nawab Hussain Shah considered them as his own brothers, he gave them big palatial buildings to stay. Even today you can see, if you go to Bengal, even today such palace he has given them. So they lived exactly like the king with all facilities. But then they were very great devotees of Krishna. So they lived a simple life. And they were constantly waiting for an opportunity to meet Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and be with him. So when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the first time, even at that time he was very learned in Srimad Bhagavatam and even other literatures. But he humbly bowed down to Mahaprabhu with a piece of grass in between his feet. That is actually a sign of humility. He bowed down to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he asked him, Kayami, my dear Lord, please tell me, who am I? Why am I suffering this threefold miseries? Threefold miseries are the miseries from body and mind and miseries from the other living entities like mosquitoes and snakes and miseries caused by the nature through the agency of miseries caused by the demigods through the agency of nature. So threefold miseries. He asked, why am I suffering these things? And in fact, all of us are suffering these three miseries. miseries of the body and mind, miseries of other living entities, and miseries of the demigods. So he said, even as a Jnani Shudra Kirana, I don't even know the answer for this question, so I am like a Shudra. I have no understanding. So you tell me what should I do? And what is my position? Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, Jivara Sarupahai, Krishna Nathadas. He said, actually, my dear Sanatan, the actual position of living entity is that he is an eternal servant of Krishna. This can be searched out even by you and me. We also understand the answer to this question. When we talk of dharma, dharma is something that is a constant companion of a particular object. What is the dharma of fire? Heat and light. Can you ever see fire without heat and light? You cannot see, isn't it? What is the dharma of salt? Saltness. What is the dharma of sugar? Sweetness. So it is so simple to understand. Similarly, what is the dharma of an atma? Now, in order to understand that, we have to search out what is the constant companion of the soul. That is the dharma of the soul, is it not? That means that constant companion which can never be taken out of a suspense is called as dharma. The constant companion of fire is heat and light. Similarly, we have to find out, discover the constant companion of the soul. So if you understand what is the constant companion of the soul, one can very easily come to a conclusion that in this world, everyone is rendering service to somebody or other. The mother is serving the child. The son is serving the father and mother. The boy, he may be serving in a company, serving the company. The parents are serving the people. Or a politician is demanding votes from the people, promising so many services that he will offer in future. So we come to easily a conclusion that nobody in this world is exempt from service. Is there anybody? Everybody has to render service in this world. We see that it is natural for everyone to render service. So if somebody has nobody to serve, then they want to serve, they buy some a dozen of dogs and they... It's spontaneous for everyone. All of you, are you all serving or you are not serving? Is there anybody here exempt from service? Anybody? Nobody. So service is natural for us. And what is another thing that is natural for us, you can say? Yes? Love to love. That is also very natural for everyone. Everyone loves somebody. There is nobody in this world who can say that I have no love. If they say it of frustration. Understand that? Everyone has love. Even a tiger has love. Probably you cannot trace out the love of a tiger. If you go close, probably you will understand. See how he loves. I don't say the tiger will eat you, but what I am saying is if you see the tiger loving its offspring, the tiger is licking its offspring, isn't it? Yeah, isn't it? Every love of flesh, is it? No, when I say love, I mean how every living being has some love towards another living being. We all have love towards somebody else. And again, the same thing. If you have nobody to love, you will find out some object of love, isn't it? Somewhere, even in the old age now. A man loves his wife, a man loves his children, a man loves his father and mother, a man loves his grandfather, and everyone has friends whom they love, isn't it? If they are living in a remote place and they create some 10 friends, then they keep writing, isn't it? Everyone loves somebody in this world. If somebody has nobody to love, then they keep some pets to love. They caress the pets and they say they show their love. They want to shower their love to someone and they want to accept love from someone. This is natural for everyone. So these two things, to serve and to love, is the constant companion of the living being, and it can be safely considered that this is the dharma of the living being, to love and to serve. Like the heat and fire are the dharma of the fire, heat and light are dharma of the fire. Similarly, to love and to serve is the dharma of the atma. Now the question is, who should the atma love and serve? Should the atma love and serve one's father and mother? It's very nice. One should serve, certainly. Should the atma serve one's husband or one's wife or one's children, certainly? That's also a nice service. Or one should serve a company or one should serve the country. So there are so many objects in this world whom we are loving and serving, but all of them are temporary. When atma is permanent and the atma has love and the nature of loving and serving, then we should also have some permanent object which it can love and serve. Is it not? Does it not make, is it not common sense? It is very simple, very logical. If the loving and serving is not only on the bodily platform, even the soul has got it inherently. So the third opening to 11th, so it has to have some permanent object. Padma Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says here, Jiva Rasarupahal, Krishna and Vidas. The Jivatma, every Jiva in this world is a servant of Krishna. So his nature is to spontaneously serve him and to love him. That is his nature. So when we behave according to our dharma, then we can become the most happiest people in the world. Then there will be no problem. Now we are behaving contrary to our nature. That is why there is so much suffering in this world. When you behave according to your nature, there is no suffering at all. So he tells Sanatana Goswami, Yaritapatraya, why is the three sufferings, three miseries inflicted upon every living entity? That is because the living entities are going on an opposite direction to their nature. They have to love and serve Krishna, but they are trying to love and serve something that is perishable. That is why they are not becoming happy. So he tells the reason like that. So Prabhupada again, the Prabhupada writes that if a person, if the intelligent one engages one's mind in Krishna consciousness by complete surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then automatically the mind becomes stronger and the certain senses will be controlled. Prabhupada says, three things he says. One should engage one's intelligence. One should use one's intelligence in the right direction to understand all these principles which you all are hearing today. This is all based on the Shastras. And in this way understand that mind should be engaged in Krishna service. And while doing so, if one is also completely surrendering, then such a person can have a very strong mind. So everyone wants to have a strong willpower, isn't it? But where is that willpower, mountain-like willpower, where is it coming from? These three things are process. One is use your intelligence to study the Shastras and enrich it, and use your mind not to simply accept and reject according to the whims and fancies of the mind. The mind should be directed by the intelligence, which is a decision maker. So intelligence will make intelligent decisions, spiritual decisions, provided intelligence is nurtured and nourished by the Shastras, is it not? I was telling you in the previous class that while controlling the senses, one should also take care of the intelligence, is it not? Because intelligence is the next door neighbor of the soul. If intelligence is not properly taken care of and you just forget about intelligence, what will happen? The intelligence, lusty intelligence will bribe the senses. And what will the senses do? The senses are actually like bodyguards. They will attack the soul. I was giving an example last time. I was giving the example of Indira Gandhi, isn't it? Remember? Her own bodyguards, what did they do? They shot her dead. Is it not? She was just walking from the garden to the building, to her palace, isn't it? She was shot up in between. By whom? The harem bodyguards. In the same way, our own senses will kill the soul. The soul cannot be killed. But they will defeat the purpose of the soul. That is Krishna consciousness. They will defeat it if we forget the intelligence. If the intelligence is allowed to remain lusty. So what should we do? We should purify the intelligence by the study of the scriptures and by shravanam, by hearing. So you have purified intelligence. The purified intelligence, the mind also will obey such intelligence. An example is given. The intelligence is like the driver of a car. And the mind is like the neighbor who is sitting just near the car. So the driver is driving the car. And the neighbor, whatever he has no power. He is just sitting by the side. But he has one power. He can distract the driver. If the neighbor who is sitting in the car, he says, I just see the poster, just see. And the driver sees that and car will go like this. So mind has no ability to do anything actually. But the mind has one ability. What is it? They distract. The intelligence tracks it and reject. Mind says, this is good, this is good, this is really bad, this is bad, this is bad. Mind is keeping on echoing. And intelligence should not go according to the direction of the mind. Driver should be so steady. Whatever the fellow is, I'll let the dogs bark, the caravan will go on. You say, no? Let him keep on barking. Whatever you want to say, keep on saying. I will go in the straight road according to the principles of scriptures. That should be the nature of intelligence. So intelligence, that's why we sing every morning when we sing, what do we sing, Guru Puja? What is it? It's a Guru Mukha Padma Vakya. The Guru's words are called as lotus voices. The divine words coming from the mouth of the Guru. What should one do? Guru Mukha Padma Vakya. chip to the core Aikya. Once you completely fix one's intelligence in that, Aikya means make one with the Guru to hear. Guru is talking of the truth, you hear it, and you fix your intelligence in that. Aruna Kauriho Mane Asha, in your mind, don't maintain any other wrong desires. Don't maintain any other desires, he's saying. Aruna Kauriho Mane Asha. So you should learn to fix your intelligence according to what the Shastras say. And the mind can be easily engaged in Krishna consciousness. And then once you surrender in this way to Krishna, then Prabhupada says mind can become very strong. And he says that the senses are like serpent which have a teeth, venomous teeth. And what is the venomous teeth compared to? Anybody knows? You know, sometimes you see in the street ends or in the bus stand and all that, they keep serpents. But how are they able to play with the serpent without any fear? You know why? Poison teeth are removed. So what are the poison teeth compared to in our body? Yes, not even just senses. The propensity to commit sinful activities. That is called as the visha. In every one of the senses, there is a propensity to papkarmaki pravritti. Propensity to commit sinful activities. This is there in every one of our senses. So when one becomes a Krishna conscious devotee, that teeth is removed. They sing in that, the Prabhupada Saraswati sings that, Kaivalyam narakayate tadasha purakasha pushpayate durdhan tendriya kala sarpapatali pratkat danshtrayate. He says, durdhan tendriya kala sarpapatali pratkat danshtrayate. The venomous teeth, which is actually the potential to commit sinful activities, that is removed from a person. That is why a devotee becomes a harmless person. A devotee is the most harmless. Actually, only when you associate with a devotee, you will know how harmless he is. When you go towards close and closer towards a few devotees, you understand how devotees are the most harmless beings in this world. Like you, when you take a distilled water and drink water, you are so confident. It is harmless. It's the best thing for my body. People think that I look the most sober when I drink this water. They are so confident. But people do not know who is the most harmless person in the world to associate with. Only a surrendered devotee of Krishna is the most harmless person to associate with. In fact, he is not only just harmless. He can do all good to the person who comes to him for association. That's nature of a devotee. So Prabhupada says, although, lastly, he makes a statement, even though the soul is the master of intelligence and mind, and the senses also, still, unless it is strengthened by the association with Krishna, in Krishna consciousness, there is every chance of falling down due to the agitated mind. Prabhupada makes this point, that soul is above all, above mind, intelligence, and sense and everything. Still, unless there is proper association, there is every chance of falling down. So, association is very much stressed in the scriptures. Like Kapila sings, Satam prasangan mamavirya sandhidu pavanti hritkaruna rasaya nakkata. Satam prasangan mamavirya sandhidu. Once you hear the Lord's glories in the association of devotees. Pavanti hritkaruna, karuna is yes. Rasaya nakkata. Rasaya nakkata is the most lovable, tasty Krishna kata to hear. Once you hear in the assembly of devotees. Then what happens? That Joshanada Satavarga Vatmani Shaddara Purbhattira Nukramishyati. It is when one hears like this, what happens? Then Apavarga Vatmani. One becomes liberated from this world and Shraddha Rati Bhakti. In this Krama, one advances. First you get Shraddha, little Shraddha again. And then you get Rati. Rati is the, is much advanced as Shraddha, Shraddha, Shasanga, Padana Kriya, Anuttam Vritti. Nishtha, Ruchi, and then Rati comes. Rati is actually a great feeling of separation for Krishna. Shraddha, Rati, Bhakti, Anukramishyati. The Bhakti is the Shuddha Bhakti one gets. So the association is very, very important. There are examples, so many examples of people who went to very great heights in spiritual life, but because of lack of association, they fell down, like Vishwamitra. Or like Sobharmuni. There are some Sobharmuni who went underwater. He was thinking there is too much disturbance in this world. So much distraction. Let me go underwater. He went underwater, he had so much power that he could stay in water. And he was meditating underwater, but alone. He had no association of devotees. Like all of you are associating together here. He was alone. So he saw two fishes in the water mating. And as soon as he saw it, immediately his desire for enjoying came up to surface. Immediately he came out of water and he married something like how many? 50. 50 Rajakumaris he married. In order to satisfy his senses. So, if somebody is trying to practice alone, then it is not possible. So, we need association of devotees. That is very much stressed. Prabhupada would say, sometimes he would, one time he asked his devotee, one of his devotees, why nowadays you are not coming to meet us? Why you are not coming to meet me here? I don't see you for a very long time. See, Prabhupada, no, I am associating with devotees nicely, but I don't see you coming. No, I am there far away, but I am always, Krishna conscious. Prabhupada, it is impossible. You can't be Krishna conscious by not coming in touch with devotee. When Prabhupada told the story, you all know the story already, you must have read in school days. He said, you know Akbar and Birbal story? One time, Akbar wanted a yogi who can dip himself in a cold water throughout the night. So Akbar said, it is impossible, nobody can do that. But Birbal said, it is possible. So then Akbar called for a yogi, and the yogi came. He was in the water, submerging himself in the chill water. And then next day morning, when he came out of water, some people told Akbar, actually, he was deriving light from this. There was a bulb in the top, there was a lamp post. From that he was deriving some heat. That is why he could stay in the water, he said. So Akbar denied the price for him. I can't give you price, you have cheated me. Then Birbal said, no, actually he has not cheated. And Akbar didn't believe. The next day Birbal wanted to teach Akbar a lesson. So he said, I will cook for Akbar today morning. So he kept a pot of rice. He put those sticks like this, and at a high, great height like this, he kept a pot. And down below he kept little fire, very little fire he kept. And he was heating the rice. It's actually not heating the rice. So Akbar was asking, why is it getting late? Why is my food is not coming? Then people said, Birbal is cooking. Then when it became very late, Akbar became very angry. He came out to see what's happening. Then Birbal said, please just wait, it's getting heated up. Then Akbar said, what nonsense is this? Why are you playing with me like this? Then Birbal said, this is what you were saying yesterday. So unless you keep the rice so close to the fire, it cannot be cooked. So Prabhupada used this ordinary story, which is closely told in the schools, for a very deep Krishna conscious meaning. He said, just like this rice, when it comes in contact with the fire, it immediately starts. What happens? You have seen what happens in the water, and if you put it in the fire. Similarly, when you come into the devotees, initially you learn so much regulative principles. Really it's a struggle in the beginning, Krishna consciousness. One has to work very hard to follow the four regulative principles and do. So when you are truly associating, all the visha will come out. All the poison that is there in your heart will come out. So you find, oh, how can I chant, how can I read, how can I say, there's no time. If a devotee is really too much said, that's a good sign actually for devotees. Devotees are saying, oh, Maya is so much difficult to overcome. Those devotees are the top devotees. That's a sign of advancement. If someone says, oh, no problem, there is no Maya, he's asking, why? I go to temple once in a Janmashtami, once every year I go. They cannot understand what is Maya. But when you come in contact with devotees, the associate, then all the poison in your heart will come out. That is true association. Associating means you should be very close with devotees. Attending weekly programs, chanting at home regularly, and coming into the group of devotees, asking them questions, offering services. That is the meaning of Krishna consciousness. Such association is very important. Why we all are assembling here every Tuesday? We want to remind one another of who is Krishna, who are we, what is our duty, what we should be doing, and what are the wrongdoings that we are doing, how we should rectify our life, how we should improve, how we can become purified. So when we remind ourselves of all these things, when we discuss, then we get the interest to further and further continue. In the beginning stages, it may be troublesome, but when one advances more and more, then the very same thing as we are discussing about Radhananda. One will realize that this is my natural activity. Sometimes when you do Krishna consciousness outside, people tell you, what is this? You have become abnormal. This person is having some beard bang in the neck, wearing some tilak and putting some kantimala. And they wear peculiar dress. They are not like common people. Why do you people look abnormal? Actually, they think we are abnormal, but they are abnormal. And what we are doing is actually the normal culture of the soul. Isn't it? But they do not know what is the normal culture of the soul. And they being abnormal, it's like entering into a fool's paradise. If an intelligent man goes into a fool's paradise, everyone will call that intelligent man a fool. Because all the living beings of this world have come to enjoy in this world, they cannot understand the true culture of the soul. So we are coming out of the bogus civilization to the true civilization of the soul. We are coming towards that. So here Krishna is concluding the last sloka. He says, evam buddhe param buddhva samstagyatmanam atmana tahi shatram mahabhaho kamarupam virasadam. This sloka is simply conclusion. There is no separate thing in this. Krishna is just concluding. Thus knowing oneself to be transmitted to the material senses, mind and intelligence, O mighty armed Arjuna, one should study the mind by deliberate spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness, and thus by spiritual strength conquer this insatiable enemy known as lust. If so much of Bhagavad Gita you can see, Prabhupada gives a beautiful summary of this entire chapter, third chapter. I was thinking of talking about the entire summary today separately, but when I saw this chapter I was so happy. Prabhupada just gives in about 6 lines the entire summary of this chapter. I will read it, please kindly hear it attentively. Prabhupada says here, this third chapter of Bhagavad Gita is conclusively directed to Krishna consciousness by knowing oneself as the eternal servitor of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, without considering impersonal voidness, the ultimate end. In the material existence of life, one is certainly influenced by propensities for lust and desire for dominating the resources of material nature. Desire for overlording and for sense gratification is the greatest enemy of the conditioned soul. But by the strength of Krishna consciousness, one can control the material senses, the mind, and the intelligence. One may not give up work and prescribed duties all of a sudden. But by gradually developing Krishna consciousness, one can be situated in a transcendental position without being influenced by the material senses and the mind. By steady intelligence directed toward one's pure identity. This is the sum total of this chapter. You all of you got it? So this is how Krishna in the beginning he was talking about. I have actually the overview of that chapter. So Krishna in the beginning was talking about dealing with the confusion of Arjuna, renunciation of working in. Arjuna was asking, you all remember? Jayati Chat Karmanaste was asking whether I should work or I should renounce everything. So what did Krishna say? Which is better, Krishna sir? Working for Krishna is better than simply renouncing. Then Krishna gave reasons why simply renouncing is bogus, right? He says simply by renouncing one cannot achieve perfection. Nor by Natsani Sanadeva Siddhim Samadhi Vatati, he said. Simply by taking sannyas one cannot achieve me. Rather, if one works in Krishna consciousness, he can achieve perfection, Krishna says. Because the nature of the soul is to always work. Actually, the Mayavati sannyasi, they don't do any work. They want to renounce everything and they want to be aloof from society. But they cannot be aloof. That's why they come back again to build up schools and hospitals, like that's what that says. So the nature of the soul is to do some work. So Krishna says, you have to work in propensity, then why don't you work for me? Because Krishna is transcendental, you work for him, then you also become transcendental, pure. And then the next, after the ninth sloka, when Krishna told about from karma kanda to karma yoga. And there Krishna talks about the sacrifices. Remember after the Ajnata Karmana Nitra, after that Krishna talked about the performance of sacrifices. Then after that Krishna talked about the duty. He talked about Nishkama Karma, acting dutifully with detachment. To set the correct example. You remember we were discussing about, he was quoting the example of Janaka, he was quoting the example of himself, how I want to perform my duty. So even Atma Rati has to perform his duty, Krishna said. So one should work, or one should offer all the fruits to Krishna. And then the last part Krishna talked about lust and anger. Because Arjuna was asking why one wants to give up, why one is not able to remain pure. Then Arjuna asked this question, atatyena prayuktayam papam charate. So in that connection Krishna told Arjuna about how, what is lust and how to conquer lust. So in this entire chapter the main emphasis on karma yoga. Karma yoga which technically means that performing one's work beautifully and offering all the results to Krishna. That is in essence karma yoga. So we are finishing the third chapter today. Next week we will be beginning with fourth chapter. Hare Krishna. Any questions anybody has? Questions? You all can ask that in temple. Here if anybody else has a question. Yes? I I always feel that that the classes we conduct here should be very practical. It's my prayer, because we have not come here for an intellectual exercise or for some mental satisfaction or for some change. We have come here for a very serious business. Our assembly here every Tuesday is to learn the culture of the soul. Who are we in the original sense? What is our original nature? How are we supposed to become Krishna conscious? So if you have to become Krishna conscious, how should you become Krishna conscious? So these classes I pray that it should be very practically useful to each of you. So I was telling the other people last week that when I give classes, sometimes it becomes too long. So like today I wanted to finish this chapter, it became too long. Otherwise we should take till 8:20 or something like that. So I didn't discuss so much about chanting, but it's my honest request to each of you here that you all should chant some rounds of Hare Krishna every day. But this is only theory, but the real practical is chanting. So unless one chants Hare Krishna, one cannot get any realization. It will all remain intellectual work that glory for you, unless you begin to chant. Or if you are always chanting, you should maintain your chanting. So Jaya Prabhu and Satyat Maharaji, they are very wonderful counselors. They are already giving, they are counselors, they are having counseling program alternate weeks. Alternate Mondays, isn't it? Alternate Mondays. So if you are not yet connected to it, you will be connected. And take advantage of this counselor group. Because there they can pay more attention to each and every one of you. Because when I come here, it becomes too late.